This is the Business Report with Gary Strubel on Nova 103.5.
It's Thursday evening. It's Nova 103.5, and that means it's time for the Business Report. I'm Gary Strubel, and we've got a packed show for you this evening. Let's start out, though, with just a bit of feedback from the mayor of Windhoek, Sade Governas, who is at the moment at the World Cities Forum in Singapore, telling us what they've been dealing with.
The summit aims to be a platform for exchange and co-creation of city solutions for livable and sustainable cities. We had to look at five tracks, which were the smart cities, urban resilience, planning and development, sustainable financing, as well as livable future cities. So we discussed amongst many issues emerging stronger from this pandemic. We also looked at accessible cities, which is discussing innovations and strategies to help cities provide better access to services. Sustainable financing, which I think is one of the most important, because if we want to become sustainable, resilient and smart, we obviously need the finances to go along with it. Just as much as we would need innovation, creativity, and obviously implementation of policies that work for the development of our city and our people. We also explored the latest challenges and solutions in urban transport and mobility. We looked at developing cities. We looked at resilient cities network, the destination city, which was assessing the current status of tourism around the world and exploring strategies to bring tourism back in a sustainable, prosperous way. I think that one is also very important for Namibia.
That's Sade Governas, the Windhoek Mayor in Singapore representing Namibia. Coming up this evening in the lead story, Dr. Frans Krenier, well-known South African economist. He's up here to launch a report on the potential impact of the burgeoning energy sector on the Namibian economy. And he shares his views. Forthright, interesting, never boring. That's in our lead. Emmanuel Mulunga, the Managing Director of NAMCOR, is in the spotlight. He shares his personal journey. We also talked to a delegation from Westgro in the Western Cape, who are up here to link Namibian and South African businesses. Jeremy George was appointed on Monday as CEO of the Ndongo Group. He speaks to us this evening about his plans, and we'll also be catching up on plans for the Mining Expo taking place at the end of the month. So lots to look forward to for the next hour or so. Buckle up. But first, let's catch up with the business flash briefing.
Rebuilding the economy starts now. RMB Namibia Corporate and Investment Banking, proud partner of BizNews.
With your BizNews, I'm David Bishop. U.S. Embassy Charge d'Affaires Jessica Long said the United States has been a proud advocate for creating jobs in Namibia through increasing Namibian exports to the United States, fostering U.S. investment in Namibia, and supporting entrepreneurship. The U.S. government, she said, has been a strong partner of the Namibian private sector, and as a result of the USAID Trade Hub's efforts, the United States has supported Namibian exports to the value of approximately $2.7 million in the past 3 years. According to research firm Africa, the Big Deal, funding for startups on the continent more than doubled to $3.14 billion, or about 53 billion Namibian dollars, in the first 6 months of the year, compared to a decline ranging from 3.7% in Europe to 43% in Latin America and the Caribbean. If the trend continues, the firm says, funding for startups may even exceed the record $5 billion raised last year. Data from the Institute of International Finance shows that emerging markets posted a fifth straight month of portfolio outflows in July, setting the longest such streak in records going back to 2005, as global recession risk, inflation, and a strong dollar drew away cash. And the OPEC Plus oil cartel has agreed to raise production by 100,000 barrels per day for September, much lower than previous increases, and an amount analysts say will disappoint U.S. President Joe Biden after he personally lobbied Saudi leaders for help to tame soaring energy prices. I'm David Bishop. Stay tuned for more updates.
A sudden storm shouldn't disrupt your long-term outlook. Access RMB's flexible short-term liquidity. Rebuilding our economy starts now. RMB Namibia, a division of First National Bank of Namibia Limited.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
Welcome back to the Business Report. You're on Nova 103.5. Time now for the lead story, and the lead story is proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future. And the lead story this evening is we're privileged to have in the studio with us tonight Dr. Frans Grenier. Frans, welcome to the show. Welcome to
Namibia. Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Just give us a little bit of background, just to provide a little bit of background for listeners out there who might not know your pedigree. For nearly two decades, you were at the Institute for Race Relations in South Africa, and for a long time as CEO. Just tell us a little bit about the IRR. We hear murmurings from time to time, but what is an institute like the Institute for Race Relations do, actually? What do you do?
It was a policy research group, a think tank in the classical sense of things, approaching its centenary now. So we're very confident, oldest such organization in Africa. A long history of seeking to advise people who would make decisions that would have a very great influence on the future of that country, a proud history predating 1948 even, very prominent in the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa. And after that, I think, pulled off the important thing of being able to reinvent itself as remaining relevant in a democratic South Africa. Influential, I think, in some of the early successes of that young democracy. You know, South Africa now has some problems, but its first 15 years were pretty good. And an organization that I left about a year ago, it's in the hands of a fantastic management team and amazing people. I'm sure it will go from strength to strength. And facing the quite daunting challenge of using its skills and expertise built up over decades to advise current South African policymakers on finding a route back to the early prosperity that we enjoyed in the decade, almost 15 years perhaps, after our democratic transition.
Okay, so let's break it down a little bit for our listeners. A think tank, my understanding, is a group of differently abled people who spend their time doing research of different sorts and consulting of different sorts to arrive at points of departure for burning issues that then can be called upon by corporates, by government, by other centers of policy to contribute to the discussion. Is that
a great question? You know, I've very seldom had it over so many years. What it is simple. Decisions have to be taken about how countries are run. And influential organizations, perhaps in business or politics or government or foreign governments, are able to take those decisions. Often, they have their own interests in mind. And these might be very, very positive interests. They might be good for the society in question. But there's also a role for independent advisors that aren't themselves deeply invested in business or aren't themselves deeply invested in an election result, to act in a sense as a sounding board, critics often, to challenge business leaders, to say, if you think this through, is it actually going to work in the long term? To challenge government leaders and political parties to say, have you considered the implications of your decisions? Why don't you rather do this? So think tanks assemble numbers of usually very bright analysts and thinkers to understand how a society is evolving and consider ideas and policies that might allow it to do better. And then to communicate those, lend them to become a support structure for leaders in business and politics and government to consider that advice if they choose to do so. So that's the perhaps the classical role of a think tank, and it pretty closely approximates what the IRR has done in South Africa over, you know, several decades.
So in your time at that institute, you would have had engagements with the ANC under Mbeki's leadership, under Jacob Zuma's leadership, and under Cyril Ramaphosa's leadership. I guess the question I ask is, has the South African government not been listening? Or have they been listening and ignoring? Or have they been listening and just getting execution wrong?
Yeah, no, not listening terribly well, I think. Remember, think tanks, and this is something I pressed in the IRR, is we've been elected by nobody. We are simply outside advisors. It is not on our shoulders the responsibility for what happens in a society. We put our views across, government leaders or business leaders are free to accept them or reject them. The consequences, which we might get to in this conversation, are on those individuals. They have to explain to their shareholders the returns in the economy. Government officials have to explain to voters why the unemployment rate is rising or falling. I think there are think tank organizations, civil society groups that sometimes are tempted to overstep the mark and to try and govern through the courts, for example, which has a place. It's not in principle the wrong approach. But we tried very much to be only the advisor, not to cross a line into assuming responsibility for the decisions that people took. And no, quite obviously, I think had some of the advice we provided been considered, to a greater extent than it was, the country would have been in a much better position. There's another side to that coin, though, in that sometimes I face the question of what is the point of groups such as yours? Look at, you know, the place, unemployment's very high, growth, etc. And our answer was, well, what you don't see is the many interventions that were made that prevented a series of other, also net negative policies being adopted. That this, where we face our, whatever we face at a moment in time, is not rock bottom. There were many interventions made that ensured that policymakers did not take additional poor decisions. And there were examples of policymakers taking some very fairly positive decisions as well. We weren't a group, I think, I think you're very successful, or you can be, in the think tank world if you don't care who takes the credit and you're not concerned about what the critics sling your way. And the IRR, I think, again, throughout its history, was quite comfortable in both. It didn't claim any easy victories, and it wasn't too perturbed if the critics unloaded on it.
Okay. You left about a year ago. You've set up your own shop. I've been on the site. It's a very cool profile pic. You've got your cards out, deep thinking mode. And you're in country. And I spent a little bit of time setting it up because clearly that's your area of expertise is thinking deeply on important topics and giving it advice. So what are you doing here in NAM?
Yeah, I've got my own outfit now. We do a similar thing. We provide advice to anyone who's interested here and around the world. So I'm in Southern Africa and around the world. Specifically here, about 3 years ago, we were brought into a project to help the Economic Association of Namibia start to think about Namibia's future. And we did that on the dawn of the COVID pandemic and produced a very interesting document that asked the question of whether really a decade ahead, Namibia would be a country in which 90% of its economically active population would be in jobs. And that's a great question because it seems a little narrow question, but it's actually very broad. If that's true, it means you're a very prosperous country. It means you're probably a very stable society. It means you're a country in which the relationships between people might be very good because you're seeing this rise in standards of living. So we started that exercise and then COVID hit and we were never really entirely able to complete it in its entirety, certainly not to present its results. And last night, in fact, we were able to do some of that. And it was really interesting because I'd obviously worked a little bit on it here and then I've been away for 2.5 years in this amazing sort of COVID world that we all lived in. And I looked at some of the results of that study that was done by the EAN guys, supported by Cirrus, your consulting advisory group here. They're amazing chaps. And I was able to say to some of our colleagues who'd worked on it, you know, you guys don't have to change anything. The calls you were making, the assessment you had of where Namibia might be headed in the long term has aged very well, even through the COVID pandemic. So that was nice. Last night we could talk a little bit about that. And then beyond that, you know, Namibia has had a very interesting thing that's happened to you in that you appear to have found a lot of oil.
We found oil.
Now, I'll tell you something that is more significant than oil. On my way here for the week, some of my clients, sort of said to me, where are you next week? I said, I'm going to Namibia. A year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they would have said, oh, have a nice time.
Mm.
They said, that is very interesting. What is going on there? Now, that's a new question.
That is. Things have changed quickly in 6 months.
Next week, I'll be in America. And I'm fairly certain if I sit down in Washington and chat to a few people, one of the lines I'm quite looking forward to using is to say, I've just spent a week in Namibia.
And see what happens.
Because the Washington Fed are going to say, really?
Tell us about
what is going on there. This is much more important than oil. Oil in and of itself,
yeah,
we can talk about. We might get involved here a little bit, perhaps with the Cirrus guys and thinking through your oil options now. But what's happening is Namibia is starting to become an issue, something to take seriously. And that is an opportunity for this country, which is absolutely immense.
So later in the show, the listeners can stay tuned. We're talking to the MD of NAMCOR, who we interviewed earlier. And he said an interesting thing. He said that their model shows the GDP of Namibia will double by 2040. And this is, of course, not just off the back of oil, which is significant. It's two of the top 20 finds of all time. But green hydrogen is an entirely new bubbling industry. We've had the privilege of talking to some of the guys involved in that and just understanding the sheer scope of what could be happening. And then, of course, we have the standard solar, which has been around for a long time but is now seriously gaining traction. And there's been some rumors of big gas up north. And suddenly Namibia, given its size, relatively small population, has the opportunity to almost be an African Dubai to some extent, because a little bit here will make a difference. But this seems to be suddenly the possibility of becoming an energy hub for Africa.
Yeah, quite. Yesterday in a meeting, actually, someone raised the point of whether Namibia could be an OPEC member. And I just thought, wow. I mean, this is a conversation that shows how much has changed. There are two sides to this oil thing, though. Be cautious around it, too.
But this is what I want to say. So Nigeria and Angola had much the same experience, right?
Well, your oil is 300 kilometers out to sea. It is very, very deep. There are very few firms in the world that can get it out and that can pump that oil. There is a dangerous temptation when you find a resource such as this to think that you are now rich.
Mm.
There's still not a drop of oil that's been pumped. We're not entirely sure how much there is. That must still be established. What if there are other oil finds in the region? What if there are major breakthroughs in the storage of solar and wind power, which change the equation on energy demand around the world completely? These are all important questions. The risk I think Namibia faces in its oil is that its government thinks it can start to spend more aggressively or slow down on other critical reforms here, because you've got something on the horizon that's going to be so lucrative that you don't need to worry about the other important stuff. And I've got a sort of feeling as we early days starting to think about the oil options for Namibia, that oil is as a best case going to be a resource that can help to finance the diversification of Namibia's economy. That requires exceptionally shrewd decision making within government and business still. So you've got this risk now that there's an idea that perhaps you're rich, but you're not.
Not yet.
Stuff's deep under the water and very far away, and a lot in the world can change. You're on the tail end of hydrocarbons. You've still got to see how Western demand for hydrocarbons and hydrocarbon politics plays out against green movements, etc. So there's a lot to be cautious of, a vast amount to be cautious of. If you're well cautious of that, the potential inside this is immense. And your potential beyond it is immense, too. Sometimes I've visited Namibia and left with a feeling that I don't know to what extent Namibian decision makers understand how important and influential in the world you could be. You are a dominant piece of the Atlantic coastline. Park a battleship off Africa's Atlantic coast. The next stop is New York. That is a big thing. The Indian Ocean Rim on the other side of the continent is a hotbed of contestation between world powers. Who commands the southern sea route across the Cape? is geostrategically as important as at any point since ships sailed around the world, since the spice trade. Your positioning here on the Atlantic coast makes you very, very influential with regards to that. You do not face internal extremism. You do not face the same problems as might be found in Mozambique, for example. Mm. This is a huge plus. Your infrastructure is basically good. Your democratic infrastructure, your systems of government and so on, chiefly sound, particularly when you go and compare to many other resource producing regions of the world. The contestation between great powers, West and East, there's in a sense have a sort of watershed on the African continent. You can be an immensely influential player in that as well. And on top of that, you now have oil. And finally, your South African neighbor is going through a hard time. And there's potential in that for you as well to play a more leading role in this region. I once had a conversation with a politician here, and I said, you know, you should take advantage of South Africa's difficult circumstances. And this chap felt that might not be the right thing to do because it would be unfair to South Africa to kick it while it's down. And I said, absolutely not. There's nothing that could inspire reform in South Africa faster than the sense that Namibia is starting to take a little lead here and there in the Southern Africa story and Southern Africa dominance. So, you know, I could easily get carried away almost and say that Namibia is extremely well positioned globally if it now plays its cards correctly.
This next five-year period being critical, the transition towards whatever's coming.
Yeah.
France, thank you so much for popping into the studio this evening. Always lovely to hear from
you.
And good luck with the work. And we hope that our Namibian government, which we've heard occasionally does, that they listen. Thank you very much. That's this evening's lead story. Dr. Frans Grenier joining us here in studio. And the lead story proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. Namibia's business leader on Nova 1035.
Welcome back to The Business Report. Time now for our spotlight. And every week we look at prominent Namibians who are making a difference. Interesting people who've got interesting lives. We find out where they come from, what they're doing, and where they're going to. And our spotlight this week is on NAMCOR's Managing Director, Emmanuel Malunga. Emmanuel, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So the energy sector is receiving enormous attention at the moment. It's an exciting, bright spot on the horizon for Namibia. And we'll get into your thoughts on what the future holds for us there. But let's first rewind. Let's go all the way to the beginning. As Managing Director of NAMCOR, is a huge responsibility from an executive, professional, and political level to produce for the country. But every journey starts somewhere. You're on your journey. You're not at the end of your journey. So let's start at the beginning. Where do you come from? What are your roots?
Wonderful. Thank you very much again for the opportunity. Yeah, my name is Emmanuel Malunga. I was born in 1971. I was born in a little village called Omuntele in the north of Namibia, specifically in the Oshikoto region. So my mom actually was living in Windhoek. It was the olden days of apartheid. And she was living with her uncle, and when she fell pregnant, she decided to go and have this baby in the north because conditions were very difficult to have a baby in Windhoek. She was a young nurse, so she went back to the north, Umtele, and that's where I was born in 1971, 4th of November. So that's really where my humble beginnings are from. However, I stayed only for 7 years of my life in the north, so because I was living with family there, my mom felt that I wasn't really well taken care of. So she decided that, you know, she will want her child back to Windhoek. So she went to fetch me and came to Windhoek in 1979. And then I continued my schooling at Mandume Primary School, which was sort of one of the sort of Wambo schools at the time. I did a few years there, then I went to Namutuni Senior Primary School until grade 8. And then, I was invited to go to Concordia College at that time in 1985. That's where I did my Standard 5 to matric basic. So I had that privilege to sort of to be chosen because Concordia College at that time was one of, it was an experimental school for sort of intellectual gifted kids from all over the country. So I ended up there and I finished my grade 12 there. So that's the, so I grew up in the north and then I grew up in Katutura as well. So I have a dual upbringing, which makes it very interesting. A lot of people don't have that. They normally grow up in one area. So I'm a northern boy, but I'm also a Katutura boy, basically.
I must admit, a lot of the people we do speak to have that experience, especially in Namibia, but also, you know, from a South African context often. How do you balance, from a cultural perspective, you would now be exposed to global industries and kind of more of a, perhaps a Western approach to economics and thinking. How do you balance it coming from, I'm assuming your family is still up in the north. You would have land up there as well, and you would get up there from time to time. How hard is it to balance kind of rural living with the modern world and the role that you play?
So I don't really identify myself too much with rural living. I have to say, as I said, I only live 7 years of my life up the north. The rest of my life I've lived in Windhoek. But I'm fortunate enough to come from a business-minded family. I mean, my dad was a sort of a big businessman in Windhoek. I mean, during the apartheid days, already he had a shop there by the central shop. So I think I picked up a lot of his business acumen and also just the whole sort of multicultural approach, because I think the shops were in a predominantly sort of Nama Dama Herero area, and sort of got used to hanging around with folks from different tribes and cultural orientations. So I think that helped me quite a lot. And also the school that I went to ultimately was a multicultural school during the apartheid years. So I think that really helped me, I think, in my future outlook on life and where I ended up eventually.
So let's talk about the journey into the energy sector. Prior to this appointment, you worked in the ministry and was also the commissioner for fuel. What led you specifically to the energy industry?
It was an interesting coincidence because I had science subjects at school, and I decided to, because the options were really limited at that time in the 1990s, I matriculated in Independence. So I decided to go and pursue a degree in science. So I enrolled at the University of Namibia, and I studied for Bachelor of Science, and I majored in chemistry and biology. So I've always been in the science domain. And then when I finished my studies, I got an opportunity to work actually at the University of Namibia in the chemistry laboratory there. I was a tutor and I was a lab assistant and lab technician kind of thing, helping, other students to do their studies as well. And then an opportunity presented itself where the Ministry of Mines and Energy at that stage in 1995 actually advertised for two positions of petroleum inspector in the Ministry of Mines and Energy, because after independence, obviously the ministry enacted the new Petroleum Exploration Production Act, and they had their first licensing round and really wanted to venture into this new petroleum exploration domain. So me and a friend of mine, who actually is now the director of energy there at the Ministry of Mines and Energy still, we applied for these two positions of petroleum inspector. And we were fortunate enough to be selected. And so September 1995, I started my journey in the petroleum sector at the Ministry of Mines and Energy. I was a young petroleum inspector then. And then I worked there for about 4.5 years. And then I had an opportunity to go for further studies. I applied at the University of Stellenbosch for an MBA degree in 99. So I went to do that there. And finish in 2000, and then essentially came back to the ministry. Had a short stint in the private sector at BP, didn't work out very well. And then, they were looking for a new petroleum commissioner in 2002, I think it was 2012. No, 2002. And then, so I got that position in 2003 as the petroleum commissioner. Was in that role for about 12 and a half years. So I think that's really where I blossomed as an oil industry specialist. I learned most of my things that I know about basically on the job. So managed to make a meaningful contribution in that role. Brought in a lot of companies into the country to come and explore for oil and gas, created this enabling environment for people to come in, and the rest is history.
Emmanuel, we're going to, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the industry today and perhaps tomorrow. But you have selected a song for our listeners. What have you subjected us to tonight?
My love for music is really very across various genres, but I selected one of the songs that I really identify with, one of my favorite songs, called Go the Distance by Michael Bolton.
I go. welcome waiting in your arms.
That's Michael Bolton here on the Business Report. Go the distance. And that is the choice this evening of Emmanuel Mulunga, the Managing Director of NAMCOR. Good choice, Emmanuel. Let's talk a little bit about your current role as Managing Director of NAMCOR. It is a state-owned enterprise, but is you mentioned earlier a little bit about the private sector. Do you view this sort of activity as private sector activity or state activity? How do you view NAMCOR's role in the economy?
Yeah, it's actually a combination of both, I have to say. But, you know, NAMCOR is now currently designated as a commercial public enterprise, meaning we basically operate on public sector principles. We are not government. We don't regulate. We are a company. The only difference between ourselves and, say, an Engine or Puma or Vivo is just because we're owned by the government. That's all. But everything that we do we compete basically fairly with everybody in the downstream sector, and we also operate on the upstream sector, obviously. So we are in an enviable position because we are owned by the government. We are able to sit in the middle between private sector and government, and I think we play a very, very important role, especially when it comes to negotiations, to try and make sure that both parties see maybe a third option instead of just either option A or option B. So we play a very, very important role in the energy sector, I think, as a public company, as a state-owned national oil company.
NAMCOR, a couple of years ago, committed to rolling out a network of retail stations, beautifully designed installations. How has that rollout been going?
Yeah, no, we decided to be very aggressive because, we had to make this choice to go retail because, you know, in the retail space, you enjoy better margins and you can actually sort of make a meaningful contribution towards your profitability. But we knew that, you know, you can't roll out, you know, a service station per year kind of thing. So we decided to really grow aggressive. And the first year in 2019, we rolled out 3 service stations. We've been rolling out service stations ever since. I mean, currently we stand at 11. We have another 11 on our books as we speak that should be up and running by this time next year. So this time next year, we should have 20 retail sites. But we have to remember, even with 20 retail sites, because we are the new kid on the block in the retail space, We have a very small market share. I mean, there are some of our competitors have 90 or 80 or 70 retail sites. And I know a lot of people complain about NAMCOR's entry. NAMCOR's entry, we are not entering to compete with the dealers. Again, we are doing exactly the same thing that Engine or Vivo, Puma or Total would do. So if NAMCOR doesn't come in or doesn't open a service station, some of our competitors will, and I know in the public domain it's quite a big discussion, because even in government circles where people think that NAMCOR is somehow competing in a space where private sector should be competing, because our dealers are also independent dealers. We don't operate service stations on our own. And it is just important for us to have a local Namibian brand to participate in this market, because when you have a local brand, you know, some of the money can actually remain in the country. The Totals and the Vivos, those are all foreign companies. They can decide to pack up and go, like what BP has done, for example, like what Shell has done, although their brand is still being used. So you want to, as a nation, you want to have to be able to have your own brand, your own local national company operating in the retail space. And that's the space that we saw. And we decided to compete, and hence our new brand, our new nice looking service stations. And we want to at least compete aggressively so that we can have a meaningful market share to be able to compete with the other guys.
So Let's stay in that retail space for a second. We've recently seen a threatened strike from retail operators averted after some discussion.
Yes.
Heavy amounts of discussion about the retail margin in retail fuel, which you guys would be subject to as well. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that seemed to be a golden thread that came through on many of the people we spoke to on the issue seemed to be the general feeling that the space was now over-licensed. And that there were now just too many traders, a situation which has been allowed to develop. What would you say to that statement?
Actually, you know, that seemed to be a symptom of a larger problem, the mushrooming of service stations. But people need to consider that obviously the country is growing. There are new suburbs that are coming up, there are new areas that are coming up, and you want to be able to serve the customer. You don't want customers to be driving long distances to go and fill up. So there is still a space for service stations to come up. But I think the fundamental problem was really because you must remember that the fuel industry in Namibia is controlled. Government controls the price of the wholesale price, and they also control the retail price. Now, in a controlled environment, it's the government that sets the margins that retailers can make. It's government that sets the margins that the wholesalers set up. Now, I think the problem when you compare Namibia with the region, when you compare Namibia with Botswana and South Africa, the retail margin here was more than dollar off. And I think in the government's idea to try and protect the consumers, they have not really increased this retail margin for many years. They're very, very conservative. And I think they've done a good job to protect the consumer. But they've been protecting the consumer at the expense of the retailers, at the expense of the wholesalers. So I think the retailers obviously made a case to the government that, listen, I mean, your retail margin that you're giving us is too small. We are not able to survive. And if you don't do something drastically now, then we will have a problem. So unfortunately, government listened. They increased the retail margin by 50 cents. It's almost an increase of 30%, which is a good development, I think, to make sure that the retail business continues so that these dealers can actually make money from this service. So that the strike was averted, but obviously there is another problem because the wholesalers, us, are also looking at government and saying, where is our margin? Because we are also supposed to make money here. You control how much money we make. So please also look at us to make sure that even at the wholesale level, the industry is profitable.
Okay, so let's take our heads out of retail and let's look at the broader space now. And Namcor with stakes and two very exciting energy or oil finds, about 250 km off the sea from Swakop. There was a lot of publicity a couple of months ago about the potential for these with two multinationals. Is this potentially game changing for both Namcor and Namibia, that what comes out of these two oil finds?
Yes, it is. It is indeed a game changer. These discoveries are massive discoveries on a global scale, but also on an African scale. I mean, these are, you know, top 20 discoveries, I think, in Africa. And after 30 years of struggling to explore without success, we were fortunate enough in February this year to make these two discoveries with, you know, super majors Shell and Total. And we have, I think, the government to thank for having the foresight to actually make sure that Namcor also gets a 10% a stake in these discoveries, because this is not legislated, it's not a given. I remember one minister actually who sort of came up with this idea to say that from now on, every license that I issue, Namcor must get a 10% stake, otherwise I'm not going to issue that license. And I remember this Mr. Honorable Erking Imtina, who was the Minister of Mines and Energy at that time. So now we have a situation where government, actually the country, benefits or will benefit from three levels when it comes to oil and gas. So they will benefit from basically from revenue, because there's a royalty of 5% that is going to be going straight to government. And there's also the petroleum income tax, you know, so this will be taxed, and then at 35% level, there's also other, you know, additional profits taxes. Then there's this third element. So government also enjoys part of this cake from an equity point of view. So because NAMCOR is owned by the government and NAMCOR has a 10% stake, government has a 10% equity stake in this project. So when you calculate the entire government take, when you calculate the entire cake, the government will actually go with about 65% of the revenues from these oil discoveries when production starts. So we normally have people just looking at NAMCOR has a 10% stake, and they think that's all that government is going to go away with. That's not correct. So when you calculate the entire cake, government still will go with a handsome 65% sort of stake in this production, which is really good for the country. And I think the people that came up with these petroleum laws in the beginning, in the early 90s, I think did a great job, because Namibia's fiscal system is called progressive, meaning that if the companies make more money, government also makes more money. And I think we should be careful to try and fiddle with it to make it less attractive. So currently, as it stands, it's very good. We, you know, an appraisal program is going on for these companies, for all of us, and to go and check how much oil exactly is there, and then to try and then develop and produce this oil as fast as possible in the next 5 years, so that we can start making money from this.
Emmanuel, thank you so much for your time today in the spotlight. It's been fantastic hearing. It sounds like a great, like there's a real ray of sunshine on the horizon for the energy sector, and along with perhaps the ICT sector, are the two real issues that we can lean on for the development of the Namibian economy over the next decade or so. And we wish you all the best in being a key stakeholder in that.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. No, it's definitely great days ahead of us. I think these oil discoveries are going to make a huge, huge contribution. Now, they will double our GDP by 2040. So it's something that we should be looking forward to as a country. Thank you very much for having me.
That's Emmanuel Malunga, the Managing Director of NAMCOR, in the spotlight this evening. And when you join us after the break, we'll be looking at more business news right here on The Business Report.
The Business Report. Namibia's business leader on Nova 1035.
The BizNews Ramp is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Book your test drive today at MNZ Motors. MNZ Motors is proud to introduce the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Contact MNZ Jeep and Fiat Group today for your test drive, or visit the MNZ Jeep and Fiat Group Facebook page and check out their great offers. Jeep, go anywhere, do anything.
Instead of Stuart Lohman this evening, we are turning to another matter South African, and that is a delegation from Wesgro up here in Namibia. For this week, Wesgro, the official tourism, trade and investment promotion agency for Cape Town and the Western Cape, an initiative of the Western Cape government, looking to build linkages between South African and Namibian businesses. We talk now to Michael Gamwo. Michael, what are you guys doing up here in NAM?
Well, we brought a business group of 12 people in different sectors, and we're coming to create linkages between business people from South Africa in general. Even though we are based in the Western Cape, but we accommodate companies from the whole country. And we're looking at forming partnerships between South Africans and Namibians, because we think, you know, intra-African trade need to be boosted. And there is no way to boost those relationships if we don't come physically and get people to engage and discuss and, you know, share ideas and form partnerships. We want partnerships, not just export from the Western Cape or from South Africa to Namibia, but we want people to engage and form partnership in the medium to long term, so that they can replicate the business that they're doing in South Africa into Namibia.
Okay. So linkage, what does that mean? Is that just people meeting people and seeing where there's opportunity?
Yeah, linkage is, let's say, a company that manufactures tables or cell phones comes to Namibia. So we find a partner for them in Namibia who is in more or less the same sector so that they can sit down and say, now, instead of you exporting this product to Namibia all the time, we can be your agent. We can create a warehouse in Namibia whereby it can also create jobs in Namibia. And then we can then distribute to Namibia and even the sub-region from our warehouse here in Windhoek, rather than shipping product from South Africa you don't even know who you're shipping to and so on.
Okay, Michael, that makes sense. You're here to try and figure out where there's opportunities, right? So exactly. You spoke about bringing guys in from different sectors. What are your focus sectors?
We usually multi-sectoral sectors, but I will say for this particular trip, we have mainly companies in the agribusiness sector. We have construction, we have furniture, and we have services in general. So it's quite mixed. But also the message that we pass on to Namibian business people is you don't have to wait for us to come here. Anybody who wants to do business in South Africa can come to us. You know, and we have better opportunity for them in terms of setting up meetings, arrange a proper program. We actually provide ground transportation for them. And then they have a better choice because we will set them up with business people in the sector that they want. And they have to meet maybe 5 or 10 companies in the same sector and then they choose who they want to do business with. Whereas when we come here, we can only come with 10, 12, 15 companies, okay, which is not enough choices for them. So. Yeah. The best outcome for a Namibian perspective is to come to South Africa and then we will host them and set up meetings.
And see where the opportunities
are. Exactly, yes.
All right, so tell us a little bit just briefly about Westgrow.
So Westgrow is it's a government agency in South Africa. We are based in Cape Town and we are the economic development agency. So we promote investment in the Western Cape. We promote tourism, we promote trade. We promote film production. We promote conferencing. So we basically promote anything that has the potential to create jobs and develop the economy and support business people.
All right. So let's talk about what you're doing here. You're at Avani for this week. And I'm assuming there's a number of sessions. People can make contact if they're interested in finding out what opportunities there may be.
Yes.
Or they have a product they'd like maybe to find, is South Africa a possible destination?
Exactly. Yes.
They can make contact with you.
Definitely.
And then you guys see if you can hook them up with the right people.
We do that, exactly. So even though our focus is more to link up business people from South Africa with the Namibians, but we also, for the sake of the win-win, so if a Namibian comes and say, we want to look for market for our product in South Africa, we'll say, yes, of course.
Okay.
We'll do that because we are connected. Our network is, you know, company from our sector. So we know who buys product from Europe and so on. So why not buy it from Namibia if, you know, there is a scope for it?
So as you say, create linkages.
Exactly, yes.
So if people miss out this week, they can obviously make contact through the website?
Yes, definitely. If anybody missed out and they want to pursue any opportunity, they can just, you know, come to us and just go through Westgrow website, westgrow.co.za, or email info@westgrow.co.za, and they will pass on the information to me, and I will make sure that they get what they want.
Have there been any interesting discussions this week so far?
Very much so. We've had a few deals signed. You know, I can already mention at least 3, which is very unusual. So already a company setting up a printing business here in Namibia to supply the Namibians with corporate gifting and printing and so on. So that's one quick win that we've just achieved. There's another company in dry fruit sector who used to supply to Namibia, but now they want to set up a distribution warehouse in Namibia. And there's another one, I can't remember, but usually it takes a long time to materialize, but because Namibia is so close to South Africa, you don't need visas, you know, to go both ways. You don't need the transportation. You can actually drive from Western Cape to Cape Town to Namibia. So the result is much more quicker than we actually anticipate when we do the same thing in Nigeria, in West Africa or East Africa. It takes a little bit more time. And also the advantage between Namibia and South Africa is that the culture is the same. Mm. When the racial divide, when you come here, you feel like you're in South Africa. There's no barrier, like cultural barrier or language barrier. So it makes business quite easy to succeed.
Okay, well, sounds like you've had a successful week so far.
It has been, and I'm very happy about it.
And if you're a Namibian business owner or you are looking to start a business or looking to partner up with businesses in South Africa, you can get hold of Michael through the Wesgrow website. That's wesgrow.co.za. They'll be here.
And let me also mention that they can also get hold of the South African High Commission in Windhoek because they are our logical partner in Namibia. So okay. The South African High Commission will obviously link up with us to pass on those. So if you can come directly to us or through the South African High Commission in Namibia, and we will make sure that they are looked after.
Right. Well, all the best for the rest of your trip. And,
thank you very much.
And much success. We look forward to checking in and seeing if we've opened up some industries.
Definitely. Thank you very much for the invite.
That's Michael Gammer, the head of Africa for Wesgrow, as the Western Cape comes to Namibia looking to create linkages between Namibian businesses and South African businesses. More up after the break.
The BizNews Wrap is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology and comfort. Book your test drive today at MNZ Motors.
Gary Struble on the Business Report.
Welcome back. Time for the Market Watch. And in this evening's Market Watch, we take a look at one of the iconic companies of the Namibian economic scene who've recently seen a change in leadership. And we'll welcome onto the show this evening, Jeremy George. Jeremy, welcome to the Business Report.
Yeah, thanks. And thanks for having me. Thanks to Nova. And also good morning, evening to your listeners.
So let's start out at the beginning. This is obviously a promotion. You've been with the group for around 5 years now and have ascended to the role of Chief Executive Officer. Is it a big shift from your previous role?
Gary, thank you. It's actually an interesting one. Now, to your point, I started off with the group about 5 years in the Chief Operations and Commercial Officer role. And about a year ago, the board, together with trustees, decided around a succession planning whereby we were fortunate enough to have depth within the company to start the succession planning for myself as well as the then group financial manager to actually move into my role. And fortunately enough, I was asked to move into Corvus's role. So is it new? Am I new to the group? Not at all. I'm new to the people within the group. No, I think we've cemented some fantastic relationships and I look forward to continue working together as a team.
Tell us a little bit about the Ndongo Group at the moment. They've got, there's some diverse holdings and obviously yes. Coming through a period like COVID would have required in many cases a rethink either of business model or operating structures. What does the group look like at the moment in terms of its operating model?
Yes. I think when you say Ndongo Group, the one thing that jumps to everyone's minds is Toyota. And it's fantastic because, you know, Toyota is a market leader in South Africa, market leader in the country. But the group spans across in the automotive sector, not only on the Toyota side, but also on the truck side in Hino. And we've also got a dealership under the Ford brand in Oshakati. We in the likes of Bocomo, with the Marathon brand, you know, 2 years ago, Bocomo bought out the Marathon brand from Tom Garth. We're Speco, manufacturing of steel windows and aluminium.
Right.
With logistics, so we've got a significant amount of stake in one of the logistic companies, tourism and leisure, and some property investments, and then some financial services sector exposure as well within the group. So a very diversified, Gary, portfolio that, yes, assisted us pre-COVID and even more so during the COVID period. Gary, when revenue is zero, when you don't have any in the tourism side, when you've got zero occupancy, or in the motor vehicles, when you've got zero sales, there you see how quickly you burn through cash when you've got expenses that and people that need to be paid.
Absolutely. Now, Quibus was in the previous CEO, Quibus McLaren, was in the position for nearly 15 years.
Yes.
And that would have been a period, certainly the first 10 years of that would have been unprecedented growth in the Namibian economy. There was opportunity for expansion. There was lots of new markets opening up, and there was quite a lot of investment money available to support expansion. COVID obviously would have been a black swan event, as it was for the whole world, but certainly for diversified groups like yourself, would suddenly have experienced, as you say, near zero revenue in some places. What specifically did the Ndonga Group take out of this incredibly difficult period?
Gary, yes, we to your point, black swan events. Just looking back at it, you know, at that point in time, I was actually also involved in one of the dealerships within the group, you know, steering it up in a very, very difficult time. We had to go back and look at the business models, and in the respect of not only myself, not only in the automotive, but across all sectors, to see what are we doing right, what are we doing right, wrong, where best can these operational efficiencies be brought into place. And some very hard decisions, unfortunately, had to be made at certain places. Where, hopefully, where we come out now is, as things start coming back, that those efficiencies and those disciplines that we had and were forced into during this period now became part of who we are, how we do business. And as and when business comes back, that, you know, that definitely favors us going forward. But indeed, a tough time, Gary.
So, I mean, the old adage goes that it's only when the tide goes out that you see if where people have parked their boats. And in many cases, that, as you say, causes a rethink. And we've seen some changes in the Ndonga Group in terms of sort of middle management, senior management as well. These things often bring about new challenges that require new skill sets. And it also sometimes requires leadership to understand, a more future-based view on things instead of a kind of a short-term view on things that this year is going fine. This now has filtered all the way to the top of leadership, a new COO as well, and Jacobina Lungameni. What do you think your first sort of big challenges as leader of a diverse investment holdings group?
Well, Gary, we cannot not look into over our shoulder to say what is it that we've gone through, learned, and use that as going into the future. We have to now look around and say, with that which we experienced, are we future fit? Do we have the right people around us? Do we are our leaders all aligned to be visionaries? Are they all capable? Well, we always challenge the status quo. And you know, that tone at the top, the spirit and the direction of these leaders to make sure and understand that, you know, if we do go through these things, are we ready? Are we swift? Are we agile? Do we embrace the values, the people around us, the teams around us? I think that's one of the key things to a successful journey, going forward.
And how's the first couple of weeks been? I mean, it's been a very recent announcement. You would have known about it for a while. From a personal perspective, you know, I would imagine that you feel a lot of responsibility as well, not only to the company but also to the Namibian economy. It's a big part of the local business scene. For you personally, what would you like to sort of achieve in your first 100 days or your first year? What are you hoping to really make a stamp on early on?
Yeah, yes, I think I said right in the beginning that this was part of a succession plan. So yes, the effective date of this came in 1 August was Monday. A lot of things have happened since Monday. You know, it wasn't as if things went and stood still. I mean, for 2 days we had engagements with one of our largest stakeholders and suppliers. As I'm talking to you now, I'm at the coast, having come to and visit the subsidiaries at the coast. I'm on my way to Chivorongo, and then off to the north, just to be engaged with re-engage with people on the floor again. Yes, it's the same Jeremy that has been there for 5 years. But I think, you know, the relationships, you know, we need to keep on maintaining them, and we need to keep on talking to our people. We need to keep on saying what is next. You know, never becoming complacent. Always seeing what are the next new opportunities, and remaining agile from that perspective, Gary.
All right, so I'll ask you a tough question now. And I totally appreciate that it might be a sensitive question as well. But as we look forward to the next 5 or 10 years, as we talk to many business leaders on this show, we typically try and ask them, you know, over the next decade, how do we reimagine this economy? What do we see happening? Some people are pessimistic, optimistic, expansionary, defensive, and so forth. From the Ndongo Group, I mean, do you see new markets opening up for yourselves? Are you looking to make new investments? Are you looking to just sort of improve efficiencies? What do you sort of see over the next 5 to 10 years as a diversified holdings group?
Gary, what has definitely helped in the past 10, 15 years and even more so in the last 24 months is, you know, is this our investment philosophy around diversification and a diversified portfolio. All of the investments could take the shocks. All of them could not take the shocks. All of them remained resilient. But you know, for us to further grow that portfolio with that which we see as possible opportunities in the market is what we need to constantly be on the lookout for. Now, yes, we're hearing a lot of what are some of the industries that are opening up, and we are following them closely, you know, speaking to economists, speaking to researchers, and making sure that, you know, we are close to the fire, and be able to be proactive and less reactive to when some of these opportunities are opening up. Yes, you'll see in our portfolio, we aren't in certain sectors. And if I were to say that, you know, this is going to be the portfolio for the next 5 years, you know, I would not be doing my job.
Right.
But we definitely looking across what is next, what is there, how can we assist in driving Namibia and her economy and more importantly, her people, and how can we be a catalyst or even a facilitator in Namibia and her growth and for her people.
We've just heard from Dr. Franz Grenier, and coming here to help the Cirrus Group with some restructuring or launching a report on the potential impact of the energy sector on the Namibian economy. And it we've also in the show speak to the CEO of NAMCOR, who predicts the doubling of the GDP by 2040. So it feels like a good time to be solid, diversified, and with a little bit of money in the bank. Are we expecting some nice aggressive moves from Ndongo?
if we weren't expecting any moves, Gary, one would ask the question, you know, is that how the Ndongo Group would operate? And that's a no. So we are constantly on the lookout. We're constantly talking to people on the ground, seeing where the opportunities are, understanding, making and readying ourselves to make certain moves, indeed.
Jeremy, I'll let you go with that. Thank you very much. That's Jeremy George, the recently appointed CEO of the Ndongo Group, telling us a little bit about his plans and the lessons learned over the last 4 years.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you, listeners.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Nova 1035.
As life gradually comes back and things come back to normal, another thing that's coming back that we haven't seen for the last couple of years is the Mining Expo, always eagerly anticipated meeting of minds of business, finance, and politics. That's coming up at the end of the month. Angie Schultz catches up with Vestin Malenga, the CEO of the Mining Expo.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. You have just launched the 2022 Namibian Mining Expo and Conference. What can we expect from the conference this year, seeing that it's the first in-person one since COVID?
Yes, now thank you very much for this opportunity to talk to you. Yes, indeed, we are now fully in full gear in the preparation for the 2022 Mining Expo and Conference. coming up at the end of this month on the 31st of August and the 1st of September. This year is very special in the sense that, as you know, we've just come out of this COVID pandemic, and I hope the signs that we're seeing with the easing of the protocols, COVID protocols, and the improvement, I hope that stays, because the pandemic was really bad for everything, economy, health-wise. We've lost a lot of beloved ones. So having gone through the pandemic, we obviously did not have the this event in the last 2 years. So this is very exciting that after 2 years' absence, we are back. We are back again.
That's good to hear. So then maybe you could tell us a bit about, you know, booths, how many people you expect.
Yes, absolutely. We have a total of 150 booths. As of last week, Friday, we've got already 126 tickets by 82 exhibitors. So we've only got 24 remaining, and we are basically expecting the event to be oversubscribed. We are, however, flexible in the event that we get more than 150 demand for more than 150 booths available. The Windhoek Showgrounds has got ample space for us to actually expand and accommodate any others, especially those that may be coming up at the 11th hour. Exhibitors are coming from local, quite a number from region, actually, specific region. And we are anticipating to see, to have a few exhibitors coming from abroad.
Then, sir, looking at the state of our mining industry, tell us a bit about that.
The industries we have, the major thing is commodities, mineral commodity market prices have greatly improved. So we are seeing very good commodity prices across the board, including uranium is actually coming up. The development we're seeing in the uranium sector is very positive, and this is how you are seeing companies or mines like the Langer Heinrich uranium, which was put on care and maintenance in 2018. They've just announced last week that they are going now to restart the mine in the next 18 months because the prices are moving in the right direction. So the industry is doing well. The industry has also performed pretty well during the pandemic. As you know, several other sectors of the economy were much more negatively impacted if you look at the tourism, the hospitality industry, and so forth. So mining has come back, and we have survived the pandemic in and come out even stronger than before. In terms of the conference, we have got the theme of the conference is Breaking Frontiers in a Post-Pandemic Era. And obviously, as I've just alluded to, we're just coming out of the pandemic even stronger than before. Maybe the last word from me, objectives still remain the same. We are there to showcase the mining industry to the Namibian public. And that's the reason why entry is for free of charge. We only charge those the booth exhibitors, and we cover the cost of everything else from there. Because the purpose of this is really to showcase the industry to all stakeholders, the Namibian public. Then obviously we are there to provide a platform for Namibian business entities to identify business opportunities in the upstream value chains. And that's, we're talking of local suppliers of goods and services. Come talk to us and we see how you can participate in a critical industry, like mining. And then last but not the least, we are there to promote careers in mining and also help the young lads talk about bursaries and all that. You know, what is the career progression if you take up, you want to study geology or mining, engineering, metallurgist, everything else that we do in mining. So that is the essence. What is new this year? We've got, in addition to the mining conference platform, we've got the exhibitors platform. Now, the exhibitors platform is where those that have taken booths to exhibit their goods and services to the industry, they want more exposure. We are giving them, in addition to that, a platform where they can actually make a presentation and even market more their products or services that they're offering to the mining sector.
Whoa. Look, I'm looking forward to the expo. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
You're most welcome. Thank you. Have a nice day.
It's the Business Report with Gary Struble. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 103.5.
I'm David Bishop with your weekly economics wrap. A total of 42,216 civil servants are in favor of a strike, while 1,232 voted against it after the government and bargaining unions reached a deadlock over salary increments and benefits, something the presidency called ill-conceived and unfortunate. Meanwhile, the Namibia Local Business Association has advised the government to give back 10% of the tax threshold to every civil servant, a move which it says will result in an increase in their net salaries as an interim measure until the country's economic challenges have stabilized. In other local news, the Omaheke region hosted a first-of-its-kind agricultural food conference expo, which was intended to address food insecurity in the region, with emphasis on maximizing the region's potential as a formidable food hub for its people. The High Court has dismissed with costs a recent application that sought to stop Reconnaissance Energy Africa from continuing with its oil and gas exploration activity in the Kavango Basin. The government institution's pension fund says it is ready to roll out pension-backed home loans to help workers secure houses. And with the Ministry of Mines and Energy having announced that it will keep petrol and diesel prices unchanged for August, due in part to an increase in the dealer margin from 113 cents per litre to 163 cents per litre, we contacted the Fuel and Franchise Association of Namibia chairperson Henny Kruger for their reaction.
It is a step in the right direction. Government really assisted us. We took part in all the discussions with them concerning the various issues that we've raised in the grievance report. And this is the first attendance that they've done. Obviously, it's a little bit lower than what we expected. It's obviously not making service stations profitable and sustainable as we requested, according to our surveys. But yes, what's happening at the moment in the economy, we're happy and our government committed to continue discussions, continue to raise all the other issues that we've raised with them.
In news from South Africa, Eskom CEO Andre De Reiter has urged the CEOs of South Africa's private institutions to take advantage of electricity industry reforms as the government works on solutions to end the power crisis. And South Africa's African National Congress has revived plans to introduce a new tax on the wealthy to fund its basic income grant. Meanwhile, in Zambia, the Ministry of Finance has engaged lenders to facilitate the formal cancellation of over $2 billion in undisbursed loans as part of measures to address its debt challenges. And looking further afield, former UK Chancellor Rishi Sunak has announced he would cut taxes further if he is chosen to be the next leader of the Conservative Party. Germany is facing a shortage of skilled workers. France is raising the minimum wage by 2% as part of a government plan to try to fight the cost of living crisis. And finally, more than 2 years into the pandemic, many have burnt out, quit their jobs, or are struggling to make ends meet as record inflation takes a huge bite out of their paychecks. But for the past 8 weeks, thousands of people in the United Kingdom have tested a four-day schedule with no cut to their pay that could help usher in a new era of work.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
That's it for this evening's show. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been an amazing show filled with diverse and interesting characters. Thanks to everyone for joining us in our show this evening. Thank you to you for listening. As always, Raymond Ziefeldt, our technical producer, Angie Schultz, our producer, David Bishop for his contributions from the whole team. Have a wonderful weekend. Remember, you can catch this show as well as all of our previous episodes on nova.com.na. Go to podcasts. You can also catch us on Twitter. That's TBR. Go check it out on Twitter, and we'll keep you up to date with the stories as they come through in the week. And, of course, you can always pop us an email, tbr@nova.com.na. Let us know what you think of the show, what we should be covering, or any views you think we've gotten wrong. Let us know. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Keep it locked on to 103.5.
That was the Business Report on Nova 103.5. Listen to all the segments and previous episodes with our podcast service on nova.com.na. The Business Report was presented by Gary Struble and produced by Angie Schultz and David Bishop. Comments and questions can be sent to tbr@nova.com.na.